Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Ride Bus. As we pull out the tattered and frayed and broken down bus, cracked windshield and all, four pretty much deflated tires, but we're taking it out and for another ride as the season ends. How you doing, Mr. Doug Tonis, the great one? How's it going, my man?
I'm doing pretty outstanding.
So let's start out with this, because I just posted on Twitter a question, and we had no pre-show prep here. I'd love to get your opinion. Assuming the Bulls win the number one overall pick, let's say they win the lottery, would you trade that pick for Kawhi Leonard?
No.
And could you give your reasons why?
Well, one, the pick will probably be there for a decade. Kawhi Leonard probably for 5 years.
Okay.
Two, whatever is going on with Kawhi Leonard, his injury right now just seems like a scenario you want to avoid. This seems like Ayton seems highly likely to be Anthony Davis type. This is a superstar type of player, and you'd get him much longer, and you don't have all the baggage, and you pay him much less money.
I'd agree with you 100%. He's 19 years old in June. He'll be 20 in July. Kawhi Leonard's going to be, is 26, will be 27 in June. I mean, that's 7 years difference, right, in age. And, you know, you got the cost control. Obviously, Leonard costs a lot more, and obviously he's going to be a better player, you know, in his prime. But, going right into his prime or still in his prime. But I agree with you. What I was surprised about is when I sent out this on Twitter, what do you think the fans, we're already at almost 200 votes here, how do you think it broke down? Yes, trade for Leonard. No, keep the pick.
Well, without having looked, I would think that most people would be so ingenious as to agree with the two of us.
I see. I was surprised by that because you are correct. 55% said keep the pick and 45% trade for Leonard. And I agree with you. I think the right thing to do would be to keep the pick. But I thought it would be a higher percentage who would, immediate gratification, instant gratification, let's get Leonard here and hit the ground running. Because regardless, I had some moron text me, it's going to cost more than a number one overall pick. And I'm just like, are you nuts? If anybody asks for anything else in addition to that on the Spurs, just tell them pound sand. There's no way it should cost you anything more. Nobody's going to come up with a better offer than the number one overall pick in this draft. Do you concur with that?
I agree with that, and I think if the Bulls wanted to trade them the number six pick and Zach LaVine in a sign-and-trade, that they probably won't get better than that.
Interesting. So you don't even think that a team with a top five pick would trade? Let's go along to that line then. Would you make that trade?
I would make that trade for sure. So well, I'd want to know what's going on with his injury a little bit. You'd have to get some medical information and check it out. But if so, sure. I'm not so surefire that someone at number six is going to be a future star, and I'm not so confident in Zach LaVine that I want to pay him a truckload of money.
Yes.
So I would be okay with that trade. But I actually don't think that trade is a slam dunk, not because Leonard's value is less than that. It's more than that. But it's all about timing and building a window. If you trade that for Leonard, then what? You've got Leonard, and now you've got, obviously he has to agree to an extension as part of this deal, or you wouldn't do it. And then you got Lowry, and then Chris Dunn, who doesn't really seem like a great fit next to Leonard. So you got to do something with that. I mean, you really don't have the pieces around him. So even that trade, to me, honestly, is a little dicey because you have to do so much refactoring of the rest of the roster to then put together a good quality team. I would probably try it, but
yeah.
I could actually talk myself out of that trade, too. Just with his injury and having to pay him $35 million a year, and you're going to pay him $200 million or something. That's a lot. And I think I maybe have just talked myself out of it. I don't think you can put together a good enough team around him in the time frame that you have, given you basically have one piece, I think, that fits well around him. Currently, you got to do a whole lot of work. So it's not a great scenario, I don't think.
So on that, I disagree. I would say if they somehow were able to, to pry Leonard for LaVine and the number six pick, I think immediately the Bulls would be a top three team and be contending for the East. That's how little I think of the East. I don't think it's.
Yeah, I agree. I think also that little of the East, but yeah. I just don't see how exciting that is.
And just Dunn, and just thinking about Dunn and Leonard defensively on a perimeter is just, you know, a jaw dropping, awe inspiring defense there. I mean, you're going to find very few teams with better two perimeter defenders than that. You know, that said, I don't think the Spurs in a million years
scary,
would take Levine.
It's scary to think what's going to happen with this. Whatever he's got going on injury-wise, like, you know, it kind of seems like he just sat this year out and maybe could have played.
Well, he did. That's the sad thing about it, though. It's like, I think
so
that's kind of
what's going on with that guy. I mean, do you trust him at all? I mean, it's a weird situation.
Agreed. How's it any different, though, than what Rose did? You know, in some respects, I think it's probably – I think Rose's might have been even a little bit more understandable, I guess. You know,
I think Rose's was definitely understandable. I still don't get the contingent of people who are so pissed at Derrick Rose for not playing more in that year. I mean, I kind of get it, like, why you wanted him to play, but they weren't going anywhere that year. And there's some people who think, well, if he'd only played earlier, then he wouldn't have been hurt so much later. Like, I don't even know how that logic makes sense. But there's a big contingent of people who believe that. Like,
well,
if he had just
suited
up in February, then he wouldn't have tore his meniscus because he'd have been so much healthier. I'm like, so you're saying this guy who's criminally fragile and took an extra 6 months to rehab would have only been better if he had not done that? Like, no, he would have just ripped up his knee even worse even earlier. But whatever. It's a different thing. I don't want to dive.
I do want to just jump in, though, with one comment, because I said it at the time. I still believe it to this day. Is I agree with everything you said, except after they beat the Nets in seven. And Noah had an incredible game seven. Bellinelli had an incredible game seven. You had, you know, that team was, it was a really Taj. I mean, there was a lot of great parts of that team. And then you're playing the Heat in round two. I thought he should have come back at that point. I mean, he was.
What is he going to do? I mean, he's not played the whole year. What do you think you're going to get out of him? I mean,
it doesn't matter.
You're just going to disrupt the whole mojo of everything you have. You started running the whole offense through Noah. I mean, I don't know. It's fine. If he played, I wouldn't be like, oh, that's terrible. But it wouldn't have changed anything, especially seeing well he did play later.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But, I mean, who knows? Who knows? I mean, apparently he was doing
No, you do know. He's been trash his entire career since he tore his ACL.
Oh,
you know, it wouldn't have done anything. He's
did you miss the game
last
night?
Well, at any point after that, ever.
I disagree that he's been trash. I mean, he's had some – no doubt he never ever reached the heights or came close to it that he had before the injury, but he's had some nice moments in the interim. And last night was one of them. I thought he played very well last night for the team.
Sure, he's had a couple of nice games here and there. But like, he's not going to do well for a series. He's a trash player now.
I never expected it to turn to a Derrick Rose discussion, but somehow we've done it.
If Kirkheimer comes up, we're in trouble.
So
steer the bus back onto the highway, Fred. You've gone off into the woods.
No Kirk talk, definitely. So now, in the interim, since we last talked, the Bulls won 6. Just to clarify for everyone, Doug, because I had a nightmare about this the other night when I woke up in a cold sweat. Let's say the unthinkable happens and the Knicks or, you know, some team that's, you know, has a worse record than us wins the lottery like we did in 2008. Let's say that happens. Does that mean the Bulls could pick 7th?
Yeah, they actually have a pretty high percentage chance of picking 7th. I think it's like 35% or something like that overall, if my memory serves me correctly.
Okay, so breaking it down, the odds are even more likely they'd pick 7th than picking in the top 3?
Yes, much higher that they would pick 7th in the top 3.
But more than likely they're going to pick 6th.
Probably should memorize these stats now, but I think it's like 5% 1, 6% 2, 7% 3, 44% 6, 33% or 34% 7, like 3 or 4% 8, and I don't know, like 0.1% 9.
Interesting. Okay. Regardless, they're going to get a player at that position. There are at least eight, in my opinion, 9. Players are going to make a difference in this draft. So how did you feel after the results of the Kings doing their King thing, somehow managed to win the last game, and we tied with them and won the coin flip?
I called it, I said, gee, I think maybe even on our last show, I said, there's a chance that Sacramento is going to beat Houston because Houston is going to rest everyone in the finale.
And lo and behold.
That is exactly what happened. No, I also thought the Bulls would win at least one of those games against the Nets. So kudos to them for finding a way to lose. And you can tell from that Paxton like interview at the end that it was like they were really pulling out all the stops.
Yeah.
You know, trying to lose. And, you know, mission accomplished. Get out the better.
Anything in that press conference that you'd like to touch on or that kind of struck you about what he said?
You know, nothing in particular. You know, the thing I like about John Paxson is that he's like super reasonable. He's logical. He's pretty honest. He's a bright guy. When you look at the decisions he makes, you know, they all make sense. He doesn't take stupid gambles. And, you know, if you want to make some criticisms of, you know, the Bulls front office, I should just limit it to Paxson because who knows who really makes the decision. The criticisms would be that they're conservative. They don't take enough risks. They're unable to swing trades for superstars or consolidate assets. You know, they get too scared to move guys with potential without really evaluating their true ceilings. You know, maybe you could have moved a guy like Ben Gordon or Luol Deng early in their career. You know, but I like what I hear. You know, when I listen to them, I think everything they say makes sense.
Yes.
You know, I'm like, yep, I agree with that. They're like, I never listen to them and think like, wow, you're totally crazy here.
No, I agree. You know, agree 100%. Couple things that caught me. You know, we need to get a wing. I love that statement. You know, so it's like to me, he says things that I think, you know, or that we both think the Bulls are in need of. It's clear he recognizes it. I love the fact he mentioned, I'm fine coming back with Dunn and Payne. I thought Payne clearly proved himself enough to deserve the backup spot, and he didn't even mention Grant. Thank gosh, you know, because there's still people I argue with on Twitter who somehow think that guy's even an NBA player. He's not. He's not. Oh, he's a two. Well, if he's a two, he sucks because he can't guard twos. He's not good enough to guard twos. He just doesn't belong in the NBA. Just hearing him avoid that guy's name was enough for me. And I also loved how he said, you know, Zach's got to get better. I do like that. Challenging players in the press, saying he needs to get better as a basketball player. That kind of stuff is good and refreshing to me and honest where, you know, if you would have had Gar up there, he doesn't rarely say the truth. Everything is, and I think at least Paxson makes an effort to be upfront, honest, maybe even to a fault. But I do enjoy that more than in, you know, Gar hum-humming about nothing.
I have talked to both of those guys in person, you know, a number of times. Gar a great number of times, Paxson, you know, maybe three or four times. And every time I've talked to Gar, he's very, very friendly, extremely nice, but he is a salesman.
Yes.
Everything he says is completely positive. Everything he says is like putting, you know, the organization in whatever perfect light he can. He's a salesman. And every time I've talked to Paxson, he's just like, he's like talking to a, you know, objective human being.
Yeah,
and in terms of who you actually want fronting your PR conversations, you probably want Gar. You know, you maybe you want that, but it's great as a fan who's like really into things, in my opinion, to listen to Paxson because he is just telling you like what he says is what he thinks. There's not like a lot of you know BS around it, and so I really value that now. And do I think that maybe Gar also has great opinions and that he really doesn't believe what he's saying? And, you know, I think that's completely true. I think, you know, that Gar's opinions are not what he says. What he says is what he is trying to put out as the organizational message.
Yes.
And what Paxson says is what I think, what he thinks. And, yeah, sometimes you don't want that out there, which is why I think they made the move to put Gar in the public more than Paxson like a ways back before they made this more recent change.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think, you know, the reaction was so bad to Gar that they had to go back to Pax. And I think he is pretty good, you know, with the team and with the media. And regardless of what people say, I got in this argument today with Waddle and Sylvie. I was on with Waddle and Sylvie, and they started talking about St. Hinkie again, you know. And I don't know where you fall about that guy. I think he's the most overrated GM ever. I mean, if you look at his 2013 draft, The guy is supposed to be so smart, yet he picks Noel. He trades Drew Holiday, which fine. You're going to trade an asset like that who, by the way, is 27 and still tearing it up for the Pelicans. And you get New Orleans Noel. You take him ahead of C.J. McCollum. And then later that draft, at 11, you take MCW and you pass him for Giannis. And then you take Okafor in 2015 ahead of Porzingis. And it doesn't take talent to miss consistently on draft picks, you know, and suck so bad that you put your team in position to get, you know, to finally hit on a few. He didn't draft Simmons. That was Colangelo. And if you look down the
court, Simmons was a consensus number one. I mean,
no doubt. Yeah.
I'm sure Hinkie would have drafted Simmons, but it's irrelevant. You don't get any credit for drafting Simmons either.
That's exactly right. That's my point. And if you would have hit on Porzingis, you're probably not in position to draft Simmons. So, I mean, it just amazes me that people. So I asked Sylvie, like, if you had a choice, who would you take to just for talent evaluation, just to make this pick, Hinkie or Pax? And he goes, I think we need a different voice. So he's basically saying Hinkie. And Hinkie's record at drafting is even close to where John Paxson is. John Paxson's last top 10 picks have been Lauri Markkanen, Derrick Rose, and Noah at 9. I mean, come on. There's no arguing with it. He hits homer after homer when he gets put in position. Of course, he's had some misses. But his batting average is higher than Hinkie's.
Way higher. And one of the highest in the league. Of guys who had, I mean, not many people have as many swings as Paxson does.
That's true.
But his average, and actually it's more impressive, though, because his average is extremely high with a huge number of swings. You know, it's not like a guy who had like five and got lucky. You know, he's a guy who's had a huge number of picks.
Yeah.
And has shown a very consistent level of success. I would probably trust the Bulls draft board more than just about any team in the NBA. I mean, like, really go through and look at what every team has done with all their picks. Look at how many picks the Bulls have made and how many you would go back and say, I wouldn't do that again. And it's like a really small number. It's like Doug McDermott, Tyrus Thomas. I mean, maybe you change up Tony Snell for someone else, but Snell still can be a good player.
Yeah.
Maybe you change up Denzel Valentine for someone else. I don't know who really.
I don't think so.
Draft class has been trash. You know, Bobby Portis, maybe, I mean, he's been very good, but there's other very good players. So, like, you never look back, though, and say, wow, he just, like, effed that up, except for Doug McDermott and Tyrus Thomas. And out of, I don't know, what has it been, like, 13 drafts to have, like, two first-round picks you missed on, and then you've got some, like, superstar picks, really. I mean, Jimmy Butler, one of the best picks ever in the draft.
Yes.
Taj Gibson, an amazing pick in the draft. So Nikola Mirotic was an extremely good pick. The reasons behind that were a little different. Not many teams could afford to wait as many years, so there were reasons why they were able to get him, but still a very good pick in the draft. Nailed all the rest of his lottery picks. I mean, in general, he's just been extremely good. Hit after hit after hit. Lowry, a great pick that I think we were all not so happy about when it was made. And so, you know, I don't know. If you take Golden State, who everyone just drools over their drafting, they've got way more misses than the Bulls do.
Yes.
You know, they've got some, you know, really big hits for sure, but they also have way more misses. So it's one of those things. They've done a great job. I mean, I think they're up there with, like, the Spurs, Warriors, Bulls. I mean, I don't know who else you'd take.
Yeah, and even guys like, I mean, you just brought it up, the quote-unquote, maybe not the best picks, like a James Johnson is playing in the NBA still for a playoff team. Tony Snell playing for a playoff team. These guys that, you know, necessarily that they picked in the first round that didn't work for us, they're not busts. Even Doug McDermott's in the league. It's not like it's Anthony Bennett at number two who's out of the league. You know, the only guy you could point to was Teague at 29, and that's not a miss because most guys at 29 aren't in the league. And he just had a 10-day with Memphis. So, you know, it's rare that they just miss out on a guy like other teams have. You know, I agree 100%, and I think it's really unfair. It's kind of strange to me, just, you know, how people don't understand this. I go back. They lost the PR battle. They lost that battle.
It's not strange to me because of how people grade front offices and how people grade winning. And, like, after a while, if you don't win a championship, which is really hard, right? Like, if they're split out evenly, you'd win one every 30 years. So if you think about it that way, it's like, if you should win one every 30 years and the Bulls won six, you know, we are now due for 180 years without a title, you know, to make up for it. It doesn't actually spread out that way, of course, because if you win one, you're more likely to win more. But that also means it's much, much harder to win the first one, to get enough talent to do that. And so it's extremely hard to do that. It's like probably like it takes an amazing amount of luck and other things falling into place to make that happen. And so when it doesn't happen, though, people just look for something to blame. Instead of realizing that this is just an extraordinarily unlikely thing, that's very, very difficult, and that even if you have people who are amazing at their jobs working at it, that it's still probably not going to happen no matter what they do. Like, there's like no path that any reasonable person could take from here to there without getting a lot of luck that gets you a title. But people feel like there should be. And so and when they don't get one, they just want to change every so often. And Paxton has been around for a very, very long time now, much longer than other GMs who have not won titles or done something remarkable. I think he's done a very good job, actually, for pretty much most of the time he's been around. But he's been around for a super long time, and he hasn't had the ultimate success. And so people say, look, no other GM could survive this long without winning a title. Why is ours still here?
Yeah.
And I think it's a good move by Reinsdorf, actually, to say, well, yes, we have not won a title, but the process my guy goes through is very good. His skills are obviously good. You know, he's doing a good job. I'm probably not going to do better if I just hire someone else. And so I'm going to stick with this guy, even though it hasn't worked out. And I actually respect that about Reinsdorf as well. You know, sometimes it's been frustrating when he sticks with a guy that you don't like, but I think it's actually reasonable. He says, I still believe in the vision and the view of the person I have in a job, so I'm not going to change him just because, you know, fans are restless. I'm going to stick with the person that I think is the best person I can have to do this job right now. And if you didn't have Paxton there, who would you hire? Like, who are you going to go out and get that you think is going to do a better job, you know, right now?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing for me. You have so many of these dumb, you know, really ignorant kind of young kids, stupid really, who just, I want them fired, I want somebody else to have the job. Look at all the horrible organizations in the NBA that are just continually bad for year after year. Orlando, the Kings, you know, even the Lakers have been terrible now for quite a long time. It's like, if you look at it, it's basically the Bulls and Dallas that have in San Antonio that have kind of like year after year been at least competitive for a long period of time. Couple outlier years like we had in 07-08, you know, a couple outlier years like this year. But we're going to be good again next year. We're going to be competitive again. I firmly believe it. And I think most organizations, you know, you just take it for granted, you know, and for people to actually look at Philadelphia, that's what really disappoints me the most and say, oh, it's all worth it. Not realizing how, stepping back and looking at the situation, how lucky they were to get Simmons. And really, the team is just two guys. You know, I mean, I don't know. I just think it's kind of sad. It really is, because I don't believe in...
Let's wait to see what happens with Philadelphia, too.
Yeah.
Like, I get why there's a lot of excitement. They could be the next great team. But, like, you're basing that on Embiid, who's missed, like, 80% of his career or something like that. And Simmons, who you know, had a major injury, and Fultz, who's now missed a whole year. So there's a lot of reason to actually question Philadelphia's future. Now, I mean, it may work out great for them. They clearly have a lot of talent, and a lot of young talent, and they could end up being an amazing team. They might lure LeBron James next year. It might actually be the favorite to come out of the East and just, you know, crush people. But there's a lot of risk there, too, and they could also be the next Portland Trailblazers, who at one point had, you know, Brandon Roy and Greg Oden, and, you know, looked like this, you know, future team of unbeatable star players, and then just everyone got hurt, and it fell apart. So, you know, you don't really know how that's going to go.
Yeah, exactly, you don't. You know, no, tomorrow's guaranteed to no one, and they're already acting like they've won a title. It's bizarre to me, you know, and... I think they're really good. No, Simmons, I think, is the real deal, but he's got to get better too. I mean, he was 0-for-11 this year on three-pointers. The guy can't hit a jumper. And to me, the funniest one of all is people talking like Fultz just because he came back. Oh, he's back. He's great. You know, it's like the guy can't hit a shot outside of 4 feet. I think he shot 39% from two. And people are like, oh, he's back. I don't know. But we'll see.
Well, we'll see.
It'll be proven out.
They could be very good. I mean, they're the one team you'd be really excited about to be a fan, but you'd also be very cautiously excited about.
Yeah, I mean, if Embiid's healthy, they're going to be very good, period, right? But, you know, if Derrick Rose was healthy, the Bulls would have been very good. You know, that's the thing. You know, we got an injury-prone superstar. We saw how that turned out. Welcome to our world, Sixers. You know, we'll see how it turns out for you. I hope it turns out great. I never want to see a player get hurt. But he's an injury-prone player. There's no doubt about it. So
yeah, I agree. And I like Embiid as a guy. He seems like a cool guy. He's, like, really funny and outgoing. And a lot of the young guys are kind of like that. But I do kind of root for him. So I hope things work out well for them, except when they play us.
Yep.
But it's definitely a risky situation.
All right, so we're already at 25 minutes, so we're going to have to push the grades back to next week. And everybody, I'd love to see your feedback. Email me at chicagobullseye@gmail.com. I'll share something with Doug as we'll take this week to round up the grades. We got two more questions, though, before we pull the big red bus in into the garage. Number one, would you trade 6 and 22 to move up one spot in the upcoming draft?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on your evaluation of the players. But here's the thing with that. The other team only makes the trade if they feel that they are not going to draft the same player that you want. Because if they think that they will want the same player as you want, then they are not going to think that number 22 is enough compensation to do it. Which means if they accept the trade, it's a bad trade by default, because they aren't going to take your guy anyway. So to me, it's a kind of like a lose-lose scenario. It's almost certainly not worth it.
Okay. And so what about two spots then? I mean, are you a believer that I guess you're saying it basically depends on who you're going to take at four in player evaluation. In general, do you believe like 6 and 22, you're better off getting two pieces like that?
I think five has more value than 6 and 22. Okay. I just think for the reason that like the other team is also going to feel the same way, that they would never make the trade unless they weren't going to target your guy. Like they know that they're going to take a guy who's like a little off the radar and that he'll be there at six and they're just going to take the extra value.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think if you can move up by packaging those two, you do it. Because it drops off precipitously with likelihood the player is going to be somebody in the NBA with every spot. You know, and that's why I feel so low on second round picks. I just think they're almost
interestingly, if you look at it historically, the gap between like one and everything else is like really huge. But the gaps between like two through five or seven or whatever are not that big. Like the next wave of stars, like there's usually most drafts, if there's a super, super duper star, there's only one.
Yes.
And then after that, there's a bunch of guys with star potential and some flaws. And it's difficult to project which one will fix the flaws. So the value, even though it feels like on the board you're so much more excited about these guys at two or three or four, historically those guys have not generated that much more value than the guy at like five. I mean, it is a curve, but it's the drop from one to everyone else is massive. After that, it can be very difficult to tell. And if you look at the history of the number two pick, it's like god awful.
Yeah.
That's so it's not so bad as think as you think it might be to pick in one of these spots that's a little further back. There's a lot of like the seven pick has a tremendously great history. The six pick has kind of a lousy history. That doesn't mean we're going to get someone lousy for a six versus seven. It just means like. It's a lot more up and down and difficult to tell with these prospects because they all have a couple flaws. Some of them will fix them, some of them won't. And you really can't gauge that until people play.
So I don't know. I mean, we've been going to your draft party for a long time, and I don't know if you feel this way, but I'm trying to recall. It seems like to me most years, did you say most years there is a consensus number one or most years there is not? Like, I kind of felt last year by the draft. Most people had Fultz as a consensus number one, although I was not as high on him. I definitely did not think he was anything near a sure thing, and I thought it was a good move by the Celtics to go down. But, you know, if you look at some other years, like I think right now it's starting to round into Ayton's the consensus number one. He's clearly... What's that?
I think Ayton is number one, too.
Okay.
Consensus.
So yeah, it seems like it's getting there, and it probably will continue this way. Do you feel like that's been the case for most years in your
I think more often than not, that's the case. More often than not, there's a consensus number one. There's some years where there definitely isn't, and those years you don't want the number one pick.
So let's go back. Yeah, you're right. That's a great point. Let's go back just like, I'll give you the last seven. Markelle Fultz, sure. He was consensus, right? You would say.
I would say so.
Ben Simmons, without a doubt. Everybody had him. Karl Anthony Towns, if you recall.
Yeah, I think he was the consensus.
But it was less so. Because I remember arguing with people about Okafor. There were some people talking, you know, but you're right. He was probably consensus. Andrew Wiggins.
I think he was the consensus number one, yeah.
Anthony Bennett was not.
No. No one even thought he was. People were shocked when he went there.
That's a good point. Anthony Davis. Yes.
Obviously.
Kyrie Irving. Yes.
Yes.
John Wall.
Yeah.
I don't recall if he was or not.
I don't remember who was listening there, but I remember thinking he was.
Blake Griffin.
But it's,
yes.
Yeah, for sure.
And then Derrick Rose. That's where we're going back to. Derrick Rose was not – there were a lot of people arguing for Beasley, a lot more than they would care to admit now. But he was
– I argued for Beasley.
You did, really?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
And ironically, we would have been better had we drafted Beasley.
I don't know. I doubt it. I doubt that's even remotely true.
We wouldn't have made a decent conference finals, but we would have been saddled with Derrick Rose's crappy head contract for 5 years either.
That's probably true.
We would have started our rebuild like several years back.
We'd already
be back in the 50-win area right now.
See, I've noticed this conversation has come up more often than not. I have no regrets about drafting Derrick Rose.
Neither do I. I even though I think it is true that not having Derrick Rose would have ultimately been better than having him in some ways, just because of the torture of like the will he won't he play thing for like 3 years. It was, you know, the high of having him and the excitement was still probably worth it.
Oh yeah,
and you never know a guy's going to get hurt. You know, I mean, it'd be silly to say yes, I knew this guy was going to tear an ACL, and you know, I mean, if he had stayed healthy, it would have obviously been way way better. I mean, Beasley's a trash player.
Yeah, I mean, we forget how good his rookie year was. He won the rookie of the year, and that was the epic series against the Celtics with him and Ben Gordon, you know, taking in and Noah with the dunk and a steal from Pierce. I mean, that was one of my favorite all-time series, and we lost that series in seven games. But I thoroughly enjoyed that. And then, you know, 2010-11 was fantastic. I mean, MVP, I'll never forget it. And even the following year, there was so many highs until he hurt his knee, you know, and then after that, it's all downhill. But I'll never trade in those 3 years. I really, you know, I cherish it. It's one of my best times as a Bulls fan.
Yeah, certainly great times.
Playoff thoughts. Have the first few games, now we're through a weekend here, obviously Cleveland lost. Let's start there. How concerned are you that Cleveland's going to get through the East? Do you think they're going to get through the East?
I have no idea. I mean, they played pretty poorly for a lot of the year. They got a lot of young pieces there. You know, they've lost the first game a lot of times, LeBron-led teams, and have come back and then answered the bell. So I'm certainly not writing them off, and it's easy to get panicked. But in other ways, it just feels like, you know, even listening to LeBron afterwards and, you know, him saying, hey, I'm not panicked. We came back from Golden State down 1-3. But then he was also talking about, like, we got 2 days off and I need 2 days. And talking about how he didn't expect to play 44 minutes. And, you know, I think LeBron he's just getting to a point where it's difficult for him to shoulder, you know, this whole load and just, like, drag a group of people to glory.
Yeah, and I agree.
His team is... You know, I think they've got decent players. I don't think he's like playing with a bunch of scrubs, but they didn't have so much time to build chemistry, there certainly aren't really other star players there. You know, he's got other quality players, good players, but not star players. And without having a lot of time to build chemistry, those good players are going to not play as well as they would if they had been there, you know, the whole year or for several years. And so it's going to be more of a challenge for him to drag that team anywhere. And I think it's going to be difficult for them. That said, the East is such trash. I mean, with Boston basically being injured away, you know, if they find their way, I mean, who do you think is really going to beat them? Like, if they manage to come back from Indiana, which I don't think is like some crazy stretch, like, who's going to beat them? I mean, you really think Toronto? Are you going to put your money on Toronto winning important playoff games? You know, it's so hard for me to conceive that. I mean, the same group of guys in Toronto has been just trash in the playoffs for years.
Yeah.
So, it's just hard for me to see who's going to stop them. I actually think Indiana right now might have the best chance to stop them of the teams that are on their path.
I agree. I was really blown away with how good Indiana played. Defensively, I had no idea they were this good. You know, I started paying a little bit more attention to the statistics, and they are rock-solid defensive team. And, you know, and Oladipo, my gosh, what a performance there. So, but you're saying you'd still, if you had a bet on it, you're taking Cleveland to come out.
I don't know that I would take the field, or Cleveland over the field, but I think they still have a higher percentage chance than every other team.
Than everyone else.
Maybe not everyone else combined, but I would not take any other team. If you said pick one team to come out of East, that team, I still would take Cleveland even after the one lost Indiana.
How about in the West? I'm a believer in the Rockets, despite I thought their overall extremely disappointing performance outside of Harden against the T-Wolves. Do you feel that the Rockets have a legitimate chance of beating Golden State and coming out of the West?
Sure, they had a chance.
But you're still betting.
They won a crap ton of games, but I'd put my money on Golden State.
So Golden State versus the field?
Golden State versus the field, I'm taking Golden State to win the whole title.
Okay.
And the Rockets make it close. Because the Rockets, like, I only view Golden State as, like, maybe a 60-40 over the Rockets.
Yes.
But it's just, like, the Rockets and Golden State are so much better than the rest of the field that it's not even worth considering anyone else. Like, I mean, you even consider someone in the East, like, even mounting a challenge to one of those two teams?
No. No, I think it's going to be a four-game sweep, whoever comes out of the East. I think it's going to be pretty embarrassing. I think arguably the three or four best teams are in the West. I think Oklahoma City can beat anybody in the East. I really think if Oklahoma City was dropped in the East, they'd win it. I love this quote from Barkley last night talking about Minnesota. They've got to be one of the dumbest teams I've ever seen in my life. I agree 100%. I watch a team, I'm furious at, you know, Towns spends about 80% of his time at the three-point line, and he's arguably the best post player in the NBA. Do you agree with Charles, or do you feel like he's being a little harsh on the great Tom Thibodeau?
Well, I can't say I've watched the Timberwolves enough to really have, you know, any tremendously strong opinion on the topic. I'll say that, you know, Barkley, I'm sure, is exaggerating a little bit. You know, if you watch the Orlando Magic, you might think that they're a little bit dumber than the Timberwolves or, you know, any of the other teams that are real trash. But, you know, I get what he's saying with hyperbole. Like, for a team that won 48 games, you know, they're not really playing that smart of basketball. And, you know, I can see where he's coming from. I definitely think their offense is not what it should be. You know, like, they definitely don't take advantage of all the pieces that they have. You know, their offense is not as good as the sum of the parts.
Yes.
And, you know, the defense, maybe it's fine versus the sum of the parts, because I'm not sure they really have so many great defensive parts. But you would think they could do more on offense than they really do.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I just look at them talent-wise. Like, I love Harden. Chris Paul sucked yesterday, but obviously he's a talent. And they got Capella. Outside of that, I mean, are they really that much more talented than the Timberwolves? Taj Gibson?
Well, outside of the top three guys, like, how much does it matter?
Yeah, but that's the other.
I mean, like, really, how much does it matter? You can put the ball in whoever's hand you want, right?
I'll take Towns.
I mean, you're as good as your best player.
I'll take Towns over Paul. Like, if we're picking, if we're playing a playground game, you and me, and you're picking, who are you taking first? You go first.
Taking James Harden.
I'm taking Butler.
Then I'm probably taking Chris Paul.
See, I'm taking Towns. So
okay, and then my team's going to kick your team.
Yeah, keep my going, right? Keep my going. Let's go. That's the next. Who's your next pick?
It doesn't. I don't even know. After that. It doesn't matter because I pick like the bottom eight. You could have the next four picks, and I'm still going to kick your ass.
Oh, I'll tell you right. Here's the next two picks should be probably Wiggins and Taj.
I don't know. I mean, you're going to take maybe.
And then Capella.
I don't think a whole lot of Wiggins, to be honest with you.
I agree with you too, but he's better than. I don't think a whole lot of anybody else. I don't know that
like I don't know the difference between like Taj and Capella. Like I don't know. Capella's had a better season.
I like Capella. I think he's an underrated player. I still would, you know, for one game, I'd rather have Taj Gibson right now. But you're right. I mean, he was awesome yesterday. He was absolutely awesome.
You just rewatched that Denver-Minnesota game, and you're all in love with Taj Gibson.
Exactly. Again. Well, you got to admit, that was, well, how great was that?
It was amazing. It was amazing watching the end of that game, and Taj just, like, dominated the end of the game.
It was incredible. He took on arguably one of the best, you know, offensive forces in the West. That's all you ever hear. And he just made him look like a child. It was ridiculous. He just made
it was comical. No, he should have fouled out like 12 times in the last 3 minutes, but it was still tremendous. And you know they let him play the whole game. I'm not saying like they, you know, I get why they were like, what? That's not a foul. Like, but hey, playoff basketball.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Jokic played great up until that point, and then he didn't do anything in the last like few minutes, and then in overtime and. I still can't get over the steal right before the regulation. I mean, that was just an incredible play. Not to follow him too, you know. So, all right, as we pull in the big red bus for another ride, we've already over the 40-minute mark. DT, a great job here. I'm going to leave you with one thought. While we were talking, somebody sent me what Kawhi Leonard would be making when he signs his Supermax. Are you ready for this? Hold on to your seat. 37, 40, 43, 46, and in 2023-24, he'd be making $49.9 million.
Yeah. So I don't know what that adds up to. Is it, what, like 240, 250, 200? I don't know. I guess it can't be 250 since it's all less than 50 and it's 5 years. But, it's a lot of money. And I think maybe I've talked myself out of even the number six pick for Kawhi, just because like you just don't know what's going on with this dude who just like quit on his team for the season, and now you got to pay him $220 million and hope he doesn't quit on you. Like that's a lot of change to throw at a dude who just might decide not to play.
Well, I hope he wouldn't quit for $49.9 million. Jeez, I mean by that time if he quits, I'm going
it's
to
a little harsh. Maybe
find him
like
his doctors and throw him. Yeah, give me a break.
Yeah, I don't. Right. I don't know what his leg feels like. Maybe he's really hurt, and it's really bad. I don't know. You know, we don't know. It's painted in the press as if he's just not playing, but maybe that's actually not the case.
It is a bizarre situation. Keep an open mind. It's very bizarre. I don't ever recall this. The only thing it compares to it is, like, you know, the Rose situation to a lesser degree. All right, my man. Great talking to you as always. Looking forward to next week. Great stuff today. You really brought your A game. Until then, enjoy the playoffs, and I'll talk to you soon, my man.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.